I'm Justin Oldham, and you're listening to an ATS member podcast supported by AboveTopSecret.com. For the benefit of those courageous computers over at the Department of Homeland Security, which may be scanning this file, I'd like to say that this digital recording was made on Sunday, July 15th of 2007. For the next 10 minutes, I'll be talking about myself and just the sort of thing that'll tell you who I am, where I come from, and what I hope to be doing in the future. I've gotten quite a few email messages from ATS members to ask me to talk about more about myself, and, well, okay, here goes. I was born on April 20th of 1965 in Iwakuni, Japan, and yes, I do know that Adolf Hitler shares a birthday with me, but he's dead, so it's mine. Ha! And I am also well aware of the fact that Iwakuni is downwind from Hiroshima. And no, I don't actually think that played any role in the fact that I was born legally blind. The truth is that I have a rare genetic birth defect, a combination of circumstances on both sides of my family, that caused me to be born with a condition called aniridia. Now, in a nutshell, what that means is that I have no irises, which means if you looked at me head on, my eye color would appear to be black. I don't have that color band. Although, interestingly enough, my eye color is listed on my birth certificate as brown, just because my mother wanted to put something in there and she thought that brown would be nice for me. I owe a great deal to my parents because in the 1960s, medical science was not what it is today. And social attitudes towards the blind was a lot more different then than it is now. Much less tolerant, much less accepted. Now, to be totally fair about this, my parents didn't have the best motives when they were first deciding how to deal with me. They came from religious Orthodox family, and they were terribly embarrassed because they had a broken child. And it was their collective decision that I be raised as a normal kid. They were just going to try and fake it. Now, I'm not going to naysay that decision, because no matter what you can say about the motives, I've benefited tremendously from that decision, and I'll tell you a little bit about why that is over the next few minutes. Here in the United States, we do have a multi-layered and very complex bureaucracy that extends from the state to the federal levels that will take care of handicapped people, people with disabilities, folks who can't work. If you stay inside the system, you will get schooling in some fashion or another, and eventually, if you so desire, you can get college. And later on in life, you get a stipend. All you have to do is stay home and be a good little citizen, and all your needs are met. But I wasn't raised to be that way. Instead of putting me in schools for the blind, my parents fought very hard to get me into regular public schools. Now, I'll be the first one to say that there are some good things about modern school systems. If your child goes to school today in the United States, you are taught a certain degree of tolerance and acceptance. Well, back in the day when I was going to grade school, each and every single day was like a gladiatorial contest, because prejudices were still unchecked to a certain extent. And as we all know, children can be very cruel. Well, hey, they were cruel and I was just mean. As I look back on my grade school report cards, I see plenty of black marks. Does not play well with others. Difficult in class. Stuff like that. Well, I wasn't going to make any apologies for it then, and I'm not going to make any apologies for it now. Those difficult social circumstances allowed me to become the person I am today. I guess you could say they burned off some of my insecurities and brought out my more aggressive side. Perhaps it's my more confident side, but either way, it's what makes me the person I am today. Because I have never been able to see very well, skin color is meaningless to me. practical matter, I didn't actually see what my parents looked like until I was 12 years old. That's why it is, even today, that I tend to judge people on the basis of what they do. If you say you're going to do it, and then you follow through, that's all I care about. It was hard to stay in public school, because every teacher in every grade really honestly believed they were doing me a favor by trying to shuttle me off to one of the specialized schools for the blind. I'm quite grateful that my mother stood by me throughout this entire process, and eventually I did win my father's confidence. Now, I've always been a writer, which is to say that I've been good at putting words down on paper. It's the kind of thing that I've done ever since I could remember. As a child, as I recall, I wrote my very first lengthy story at the age of 5. I didn't realize it at the time, but the central character of that story was somebody who'd pop up 25 years later in the first novel that I wrote. I'm sure that was just a subconscious decision on my part, but I'm not ashamed of it. It's not unreasonable to say that I took my gifts as a writer for granted. All the way through high school, I was intent on studying government. I was intent on being a federal civil servant. My eyes are bad, of course, so I can't serve in the Army, but I would like to serve my country, so I'll put on the coat and tie and I'll go to work in federal service. That was the plan. Even in college, I had professors leaning on me to switch majors and go into the field of writing. You know, I had plenty of people from the English departments bend my ear on more than one occasion, but I did not swerve from my intended goal. It was difficult, but I did in fact get out of college with 2 degrees, and I went on, and after a period of sucking mud for 2 years, eventually I found work with the federal government. I've previously talked about what ended my federal career, so we'll just move on to other things. Now, after I did leave federal service, realizing that the pen was mightier than the sword, I went back to wordsmithing and wrote my first novel. In its own way, that first book is responsible for me being on AboveTopSecret.com today. After I wrote it, I shopped it around to publishers and sucked mud for a long time. Couldn't get published. Okay, fine. In many respects, I think my work is ahead of its time, and that's just like me to do something that I can't use now, but darn it, I have to wait a few years. From 2004 to 2006, I made 2 separate efforts to self-publish, and things didn't work out so well. But during that period, the few books that I did sell generated a lot of fan mail, or at least as a lot as far as I'm concerned, in the hundreds. And mixed in and amongst those hundreds of emails, people kept referring me to this obscure website called AboveTopSecret.com. Now, I say there is no shame in failure as long as you pursue your goal with heart and soul. If you give it your all, then ultimately you cannot be wrong. Well, eventually I got picked up as a moderator for a politics board that doesn't exist anymore, and when that happened, it was like throwing gasoline on a fire. The calls for my entry into AboveTopSecret.com only increased. Well, that politics board folded, and then I made some inquiries and showed off my work and answered a battery of questions, and the rest, of course, is classified, but needless to say, here I am. And ultimately, where I am is not such a bad place. I'm doing a little radio on the side. I maintain my own off-site blog, and I have had IM conversations, email conversations, with some of the most interesting and unlikely people in the last 2 years. My star is rising slowly, but it is rising, and that makes me want to get out of bed every day. 10 years from now, I hope to look back on these as the good old days, and who knows, it might be fun to replay this podcast just to see what I sound like. With any luck, wealth and fame will not spoil me too much. And this brings us to the end of our ATS member podcast, which will reach millions, supported by AboveTopSecret.com.